Hey, everyone, and welcome to episode 8 of Couch Confidentials, brought to you by MarTech Therapy. I'm your host, Matthew Niederberger, and my guest today is Mike Ferguson, a seasoned customer data and engagement professional who believes that success not only lies in technology, but also in the people and processes who and that need to work with the technology. Mike is the Vice President Global Services and General Manager EMEA at Redpoint Global, a company renowned for its data management and customer engagement platform that enables real-time, hyper-personalized experiences. It was founded in 2007. It also specializes in delivering a unified platform that connects customer data and orchestrates marketing campaigns, empowering businesses to provide seamless and personalized customer experiences. Well, welcome to Couch Confidentials, Mike. It's good to have you on the show.
Matthew, so grateful to have me to be invited here. Really appreciate it. So excited to be here and to have a chat and a cup of coffee with you. And maybe, you know, start some conversations. I'm sure that the listeners to your podcast, you know, they'll be chipping in with comments. Let's start that conversation.
Absolutely. I just want to kind of share my story about how I discovered Redpoint Global. I was working for I'm still working with them, a client in the Middle East. And due to local regulations, it was quite hard for them to consider even a CDP that was going to be hosted in the cloud, since there are a lot of laws around securing the personal data and making sure that it stays within the boundaries of that country. Redpoint Global popped up on my radar as also offering on-premise solutions. Now, I don't want to sit here and do a sales pitch for you, but I'm quite curious to understand what Redpoint Global's motivation was to also focus on on-premise solutions, because there are not a lot of vendors that offer that.
Well, Matthew, I think this is part of history. So Redpoint's been around since, you know, a good number of years. And we probably predate some of the ability for, you know, for customers to really just have their own cloud. Yeah. So we probably predate at points the AWS cloud and Azure. So, you know, we grew up with a strong DNA on customer data and the management of customer data. That was really the focus of the company when it was founded by our original founders. And we've just stayed with that all the way through. Now, clearly, the technology that we use has evolved, but we've always had customers that have just kind of said, "Okay, we need this solution for customer data behind our firewall," and that can be for a number of reasons. But historically, it may have just been because they weren't ready for the cloud. But as we think about regulated industries, so often,
and then we're talking about banking, insurance, etc.,
healthcare. You know,
healthcare, definitely a good one.
That's a big thing. You imagine if an organization is carrying your health data, Matthew, you want that data to be super duper secure. It wants to be, you know, in Fort Knox. So that's so important. And so when we're working with, so the need for being able to deploy customer data management systems behind an organization's firewall has always been there. There's an ease with SaaS. You know, you can we're just going to turn on SaaS one day and it'll just be there.
Just like with turnkey offices, you need an office, you need a desk, pay the rent, and voila. And it's, SaaS is kind of the digital version of that.
Absolutely. Yeah. So you get that kind of SaaS thing, and then that's one way of working. And then you get other organizations where it's just kind of, okay, yeah, we can do some stuff, but often it's about where that data resides.
Yeah.
And so, you know, for the opportunity that you're working on, data needs to reside in that country. That's really important. And and then for some organizations, it has to actually reside even closer, so that actually within that, the risk on the data is held by the organization rather than it's spread across a bunch of different organizations.
And as we saw with CDP Institute's member survey that was released 2 weeks ago, there was a spike in interest among the people who participated in this survey. I believe it's up to, they do I believe it was a 5-year look back, and it's back up at the level that it was 5 years ago and more than doubled compared to 2023. Yeah. Are you also seeing this among your client base, that a lot more people are showing interest in either private hostings instead of multi-tenant and on-premise solutions?
Yes, we are. I mean, we do focus a lot on the regulated industry, so that maybe does skew it slightly.
Exactly. Yeah. True.
But let's be honest here. You know, I'm coming up with an opinion and my viewpoint, but my viewpoint is from one place in the market. But also, you know, we're seeing customers who and prospects who have been burnt by saying, "Hey, we're gonna buy into the cloud story," but then costs are not what they originally projected. Consumption
is it going up or down, or what were the surprises there?
I think the surprises are sometimes when it's a consumption-based model. If an organization is assuming that they are going to consume the heck out of something, you know, that you're investing in something like a CDP, mm-hmm. Well, you want lots of data being ingested in there, you want lots of storage, and then you want your business to be able to all be using that CDP. So often we think about CDPs as a marketing tool, but actually, when a CDP is working well, it's not just a marketing tool, it's an operational tool as well. Maybe the call center wants to use it. Maybe finance wants to dip in and do some analysis. And when you think about that amount of consumption, sometimes the cost can just explode at that point. And so we've seen some organizations be a little bit wary of stepping into that.
Yeah. And in terms of features, I mean, there's been a lot of discussion now about CDP 1.0 and CDP 2.0, and we're starting to see a lot of differentiation between various vendors. A great example that I discovered the other day researching for some work is that artificial intelligence, there's no way around it. We need to, but I've seen three different applications of artificial intelligence within a CDP now, and that gives me hope that there's definitely not a one size fits all at the moment. But taking a few steps back, what in your opinion really defines a CDP? Or, you know, is that category something that needs to be split up into separate ones or a new one altogether? Because it is kind of getting, how should I say, the category is getting a little bit tainted at the moment. And a clear picture of a CDP, in your mind, what does that look like?
So I'm very, very aware that the current definition of a CDP is so varied that it's creating a lot of confusion in the market. And the definition that each vendor provides is often tainted by that perspective of where they've come from. From the Redpoint side, we've always been in the data management, data preparation, getting your data ready. And then we've also always had an engagement platform as well. So we kind of cover fairly wide range, but I see people that are coming from a more of an ESP background going into the CDP world, and they see it as kind of like, well, actually it's more about, let's get the data ready for an email campaign or even an omni-channel campaign. So it's about, hey, you've got a database somewhere, and I'm not going to really worry about how that data has come together. I'm just going to assume it's there, and then we're going to do some great selections on it, and we're going to power some omni-channel journeys. And so that's kind of like where those marketing clouds have kind of spread out a little bit and sort of tried to go downstream. Yeah. Yep. And then you get the ones that are kind of like come from a very kind of web first mode. So maybe you might have come from a tag management type background. And in there, you know, they're often great around getting data from that web journey and, you know, the online journey. They're fantastic tools for that. But then as soon as they want to kind of make a step over into the in-store world or the in real life world, those kind of data feeds are more of a struggle for them.
Yeah.
But so when I think about defining a CDP, I think it needs to have these things. It needs to have data ingest. You need to be able to get data into it. You need to have data quality. Okay. Because often, you know that data comes in and it's messy.
You mean data quality monitoring? I mean,
well, actually, if you can do anything during that ingest, most, you know, we're ingesting data from everywhere.
Yeah.
If you can do anything to make sure that the data is parsed well, it's clean and it's good, then when you get to the next stage, which I think about as ID resolution, yeah, it's about creating identities. If you don't get the quality first, your ID resolution is going to be rubbish. Yeah. Rubbish in, rubbish out.
Exactly. Yeah.
It's kind of obvious. Then from there, you then do some, that enables you to then do analytics. But basically at that point, once you've got your ID resolution, you create your 360 view, you create your golden record. And then at the end of it, it's about creating some kind of segmentation, some kind of selection. So that can be pushed out into engagement platforms for whatever you want to do with it. You could activate it through marketing. You can use it for operational use cases. But I think that's the core of the CDP, yeah, in my view. Yeah,
and if you look at that then I think it's safe to say that the activation part, making sure that we can send that data downstream to the platforms that generate the leads, that generate the clicks to our platforms where people buy, that's where the CDPs start generating value. The part before that is all part of the process. And the closer you get to the source of the data and improve what you collect there is going to vastly improve the results you're going to get at the end. And one of the arguments I'm hearing quite often is that companies are not satisfied with the value, the ROI that CDPs are generating for them. And I know that you're a huge fan of the product people process, well, at least the people in the process, and because you work for the product. And in your opinion, how far have we come in the last 10 years? Because just to kind of paint the picture here a little bit, you know, 10 years ago, I was seeing the same problem with web analytics. We had Google Tag Manager come into place. People were slowly becoming a little bit more mature working with digital data to be able to identify that the data that they're working with was not sufficient. It was not, quality was so low that they started to doubt the insights they were generating. And I think we're seeing that same wave of doubt hit the CDP user community. And I'm interested to know about what are your thoughts around people and process, and how should organizations approach CDPs now in 2025? Because we've seen that in some cases it works, and in other companies it doesn't. And I've got my personal experience, which I'll share with you, but first I want to kind of pick your brain about and see what have you been seeing?
So what I see is that sometimes organizations think that CDPs are going to be just a magic wand, that they're going to just install
the same
it.
That analytics was exactly, yeah, it's
exactly. And that, you need people to be able to one to continue to ingest more data, because when you do your first implementation, you're probably going to select probably 60% of the typical feeds that you're going to want in your CDP, but actually you need some way of continuing to add in more data in there, because your organization is agile, your organization is moving,
backed by a solid use case. Though I mean, you don't want to track everything. I mean, taking data minimization rules into account. Yeah,
there is that cycle. You need the use case. You need to understand how you're going to use it in the business. There needs to be a demand somewhere, and then that will look back. And then, and I was just talking to a CDP manager earlier on in the week, and he was just like, "Okay, so I need to get more data in because I've got this use case. I can see how we can create some really good value. I just need to get the data in quickly. How do I do that?" And we're just like, okay, so this is how you get the data in. So you need to understand how you get the data in, get it through, get it processed. You need somebody that can then activate that data and move it through. And one of the challenges that I see with organizations is that it actually probably crosses organizational boundaries in terms of that implementation. You need a bit of IT tech stuff, that data engineering piece. You probably need some good analytics. And actually, does analytics sit in business or does it sit in IT? That depends on which business you're in. That's always a bit crazy. And then you need a business team that can actually kind of get behind that and actually understand what you're trying to do there. So when we think about, you know, technology, people, process, one, you've got to get the right technology. And I've got loads of opinions about technology. But you also need a process that works. You know, clearly you need to be able to say, okay, we're going to, if you imagine, start up a new sprint, a new project to say, hey, we're going to create a new use case. And that will be multidisciplinary. It may hit the data team and say, okay, what data is there more data we need to bring in? Or actually, do we talk to the data team and they might say, actually, it's in the CDP already. Seen that a lot of times. Okay. Then we're going people, process, technology. So just thinking about the process and the multidisciplinary part of it, you need the tech team, you need the analytics team to actually go through there and say, yes, okay, what am I driving out of this? And yes, there's always the magic AI wands that people are talking about that, you know, all of a sudden we'll just have the right analytics. Matthew, you and I know that actually that's not how it works with analytics. You need to have the question first to sort of say, okay, is there something there? Yeah, to go and ask that and you know, imagining the right hypothesis is something that I think really is important when we're thinking about working with AI. Because if we're just waiting for AI just to spit magic out of us.
That's machine learning then.
Yeah, but also, what are you doing in your job? You know?
True.
How are you going to be challenging your AI to get good stuff out of it? So you've got your you've got your engineering team, you've got your analysis team, and then you've got your activation team. And so often, even across the activation teams in an organization, I see silos there in the organization where, you know, you've got one team dealing with paid media, another team dealing with outbound emails, another team dealing with app communications. Actually, for a lot of organizations, they underestimate the amount of work it is to get a process to run across those teams and to make sure that the people in there have the right skills to do all that.
Yeah. How did this happen? Because it's, you know, I think one of the things I learned when growing up is sometimes you kind of need to look in the mirror. Sometimes you need to take a hard look at yourself and say, hey, you know, maybe that something's, you're not doing something right. You need to look at yourself saying, okay, why is this not happening the way that it should? And in the case of CDPs, why is it not delivering any value? Mm-hmm. And in too many of those cases, I've come across, because I get invited to do assessments for replacements of a CDP.
Yeah.
And the first question I have, why is the CDP failing? Mm-hmm. And it's so difficult for organizations and to properly understand that sometimes it's not the technology. I've seen time and time again, the technology works. But if, like you said, if you underestimate the effort and the resources and the skills required to put in a solution like a CDP, it's going to fail. And 9 out of 10 times, probably higher, you know, 9.5, 9.8, the CDP is going to be booted. It's that self-reflectionary moment towards the organization saying, hey, maybe it's us that needs to change, is what I find lacking. And I'm hoping we're going to see change in that moving from 2025 yeah. onwards.
I think sometimes it takes a moment of self-reflection, both as a CDP vendor and also as a CDP customer, to say, okay, how do we get this done?
Yeah.
And, you know, I've been in this field a while now. And so I've seen it when it's worked and it's done, you know, produced immense value for an organization. I've also been in those meetings with customers where they kind of go, Mike, I'm not seeing it. How are we going to do it? And then at that point, you know, that's a real kick in the behind for me to just get in front of that customer and say, okay, let's work together. And last summer I was in the States with a big car hire firm, and they challenged me like that. It was like, Mike, and I said, well, I know you're getting data out of your call center. You know, that's working well for me. And they're sort of saying, no, I want to see revenue into the marketing team. It's like, okay. So the cost efficiency that we're generating in the call center wasn't enough. We needed to have another story.
Uh-huh.
And, you know, there's always politics in organizations. Yeah. So, you know, I'd love to be able to walk into every single marketing team and they turn around and go, yeah, we want to do that. That sounds great. You know, they've probably been working in one way for the past 3-5 years. They've got their way that they show they're creating value. And the idea of taking a risk on something else is a bit scary. And for this organization, we went in and said, look, let's just identify a use case and I'll help you do that. And so my team got involved and we just the CDP had already been created. They were running massive amounts of paid media campaigns. And we just put in a small team to just connect the two things together to say, hey, let's get your really good data and push it into your existing paid media campaigns. They're forecasting to make an uplift out of one region in the world of $10 million in the first year. $10 million uplift.
I'll take that, yeah.
And I'm kind of like, actually, guys, you know, sometimes you need a bit of that and then create that story so that then the internal storytelling within the customer is kind of like, okay, there's value to be had out of this, but we need to sit down. We need to invest time, thought. We need to think about process. We need to make sure we've got the right people, because if we can do it in one region, surely we can do it in the other regions too.
Is this kind of a responsibility that needs to rest with vendors? I mean, if you look at CDP as a product, just in the most generic version that we can find, as you correctly stated, it's multidisciplinary. And one project that I was on, that kind of the experience I wanted to share with you, is that on the day that I started working there as an advisor, it felt like it was my birthday. They had a project manager, they had a back-end engineer, they had a front-end engineer, they had a data scientist, they had a data engineer, they had someone from privacy, and not the project manager, but kind of they had an extra role, someone who was in charge overall of the CDP, who ultimately became the CDP champion internally, kind of promoting the solution. And it was one of the easiest projects I'd ever done that delivered. And of course, if you disregard the time span, because, you know, you do need to, there's a lot of processes involved in finding how to properly implement this. But this ideal scenario is what I often find missing with companies. You're correct in saying the CDP, when you look at the individual parts that make up a CDP, we're looking at technology, we're looking at data, we're looking at marketing, we're looking at business. And if those teams don't work together, in my opinion, CDPs are always bound to fail, because it's such a wide product covering so many areas of the company. I'm surprised there's not a company that's started a cross-departmental department to say, hey, we're in charge of the CDP, but we're going to be communicating with all these departments from day one, because I still feel that that's going to be a solution. I mean, I need to take driving lessons to understand how to drive a car. I can't just jump in. I'll probably crash. Well, hopefully I can find a way to start the engine, but if I was, I'd probably crash the damn car. And I think that's what we're seeing with CDPs still to this day.
Yeah. So I totally agree that there's some responsibility from the CDP vendors. Yeah. I also think that working with consultants like you, Matthew, actually, you know, that's a really good combination, because it's difficult. I mean, at Redpoint, we really get some verticals really, really well, you know, and so that's great, but we can't cover them all, you know. And so it's really important for partnerships to be there, where you've got people that understand CDP and the vertical really, really well, and those use cases, and the technology vendors alongside them working closely together. And actually, those partnerships can often, you know, when we hear back from our customers and our partners about, okay, actually, if the technology was altered slightly, it would work better.
Yeah.
We love that, those kind of things, because that enables us to continue to improve our software. So I think those kind of things are important. But it's also, as we're going through that selling process, you know, actually, how do you go through and sort of say to a customer, I don't think you're ready for a CDP yet? That's a really challenging thing to do.
I had it last week. I kid you not. There was a company, they're already using a CDP, but just for the data ingestion and distribution. They're not doing profiles or any audience building and activation, but they're just doing the pass through. And you're right, it's difficult, because you see the opportunities there, but they're just not there yet. Sorry, I interrupt you, but yeah, it does still happen.
Yeah, well, I think we see that sometimes. But at the end of the day, what we want to do is help organizations make more money. That's, you know, as a vendor, that needs to be part of the mindset. It's not just about selling software, because, you know, you sell software, that's great, but actually what you want to do is sell a long-term relationship. And a long-term relationship is where, you know, we as Redpoint add value to the customer, and they understand that, and they kind of go, okay, this is good stuff. I'm giving Redpoint some money, but actually we make X times more than that every year. So it's a good investment. And that's a good relationship with a customer, isn't it?
So yeah, definitely. And is it two-way with your customers? I mean, do you get a lot of feedback from customers that you are putting into product development, for instance?
Oh, absolutely. We've got a really, really strong enhancement queue. And when I first joined, even before...
I like that word, enhancement queue. Yeah, you're right.
Yeah.
Instead of roadmap.
I worked with a well-known marketing cloud before I joined Redpoint, a few jobs before. And you get customer enhancements, and you know that they would never, ever show in the product, you know? And even if the idea was great, it was just a big monolith and it wouldn't happen. Now, at Redpoint, before I joined, I spoke to a contact who had actually worked with Redpoint and a partner. I said to her, how do you find Redpoint? And she said, well, one of the great things is you can actually put an enhancement in, and actually it will turn up in the product at some point, if it makes sense. And that was 8-9 years ago. And we continue to do that. And we're continuing to invest in that. Because if you don't, if you just sit there and you let your product stay still, then it's old fashioned. It's all done, you know? And that's where, you know, I look back at the old product that I used to work on with the marketing cloud, and it was out of the CDP space. The interface is exactly the same as what it was when I left it. And I'm thinking, well, that's not, where's the enhancement there? You know, whereas at Redpoint, we've got a really active in queue to just keep going through. Now, we've also got our own roadmap in the direction we want to go, but we're also listening to customers all the time, and we actively encourage it.
And out of curiosity, not to put you on the spot, because I know this is, you know, you might have not dived into this topic internally for a long time, but what are some of the enhancements that customers have been requesting? Because I always find it interesting to hear the perspective of the vendors on, you know, what their vision is of their product. But what's important to acknowledge is that your end users are the ones who are really using it every day. And do you have some fun, like, enhancements that you've come across lately?
What some of the enhancements that we've done over the, and my product manager will kill me now because I'll forget all the big ones. But I mean, we've done a load of stuff over the last few years around metadata, so that actually as the data flows through and then gets segmented and then gets pushed out for use, good metadata can be assigned during that selection process. And if you get the metadata right there, then the whole of that kind of cycle where you push it out, you activate it, you get some results and it comes back, that whole value attribution piece is much easier to establish. So that was a piece that, you know, actually didn't take a lot of work. But from hearing back from the customers, like, okay, I'm struggling to make sure that I see the full cycle. How do I make this better for me as a business?
Yeah.
Understanding what the value is. That's, you know, and for us, it's just like, okay, we can do that. That's you know, that makes a lot of sense.
So when the project that I was working on, I did get a small demo. And I have to say, one of the features that I was really impressed about is the geo-targeting. And I know it's a topic that has a bright side and a darker side, as I showed in a video. But if we're looking at the bright side of geo-tracking, the interface that you guys were offering, how should I say, what's the English word for this one? There's always one English word that I struggle with during a recording. Intuitive.
Intuitive, yeah, okay.
Yeah, where you have a map and you're actually able to box around a specific area that then Redpoint Global can actually use to target users as soon as they've identified themselves as being in the region. What are the main kind of usages that, apart from the actual targeting, but what kind of industries are using geo-targeting the most, in your opinion?
Sure. Well, I mean, there's always that kind of that retail use case. It's like, hey, I've got a store. I've got a bunch of people out there. I want to know actually, you know, I want to target the people that have got a reasonable drive time to the store. Okay. So with getting all this geo stuff, we can actually calculate drive times as well.
Oh, wow. Okay.
And that's quite cool.
Yeah.
But then you start to think about that beyond. So you think about taking that into the travel and hospitality world. Okay. So, you know, actually hotels, you know, you understand that where people's targets might be in terms of where you think they might be going. If you've done some good analysis. Now from there, which hotels are going to be within that region? What should you be pushing there? I don't know what it's like for you, but when I travel on business, often I'm going into a city that I don't really know. I probably like a hotel chain. And I'll probably go in and sort of say, show me all the hotels that are in this city for this chain, you know? And it's just like, okay, that's an interesting piece of targeting. But then you can then use that much more in the analytics world as well. So when you're thinking more about in the healthcare world, so in the healthcare, if I'm a healthcare provider, a hospital type provider,
yeah,
who's within a reasonable journey to be in my catchment for that hotel group? Again, just understanding there.
Because, for the hospital.
The hospital.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm talking like in the US where, you know, you've got large hospital groups and being able to sort of say, okay, well, I understand maybe I'm a hospital group in Texas and I've got all the hospitals, but what are the ones that are appropriate for this person? I should be sort of saying, hey, you know, when the time comes, this is the right hospital for you to come to.
Okay. And how does that work with privacy within and Redpoint? I think that's one of the topics we didn't discuss with the demo that I had several months ago, but I know it's at the core of the product. How does it, how does Redpoint view, especially around geo-targeting and even consent banners? Because again, it's a hot topic now with the laws being enforced in France.
Absolutely. So the way that we see it is, you know, it's really important that the preference data and the permission data is available, and it's about using the data in the right way. And I know, you know, looking at GDPR, for so often organizations have just thought of it as a, can I market to them or not?
Yeah, very true. I like that. Yeah, no, very true.
And that's kind of, you know, but for some, that's you know, that's all they do. But now in this world where, you know, we're doing a lot more in the world of analytics, you've got AI happening, you need to know that whether data should be used for modeling. That's a really important piece, because that is another permission that people can choose to not give that permission.
Yeah.
So, I mean, I've got to say, there are times where, you know, you get the big page up, which when you go to a website, it says, okay, do you accept cookies? And I always go, well, I'm going to adjust some. And what I generally do is, rather than just kind of do yes, either yes to everything or no to everything, I'll go through and say no to everything apart from one, just to see what it does. Because actually, our organization's ready to be able to say, okay, this guy, he says that I can't do anything with this data apart from geo modeling. That's a the granularity in that, I don't think most organizations are ready.
No, and that comes back to your quote saying that I think the maturity around privacy and consent is that companies use it to determine if they can market or not. I think that quote from you is spot on. And I have been talking to a lot of privacy advocates these last couple of weeks, Brian Clifton being one of them. He's got a great tool called verifieddata.com, where you just put in a URL. You know, these checkers are free. And you can say, hey, accept all the cookies or deny or just accept the marketing, et cetera. And the amount of tags still being dumped into the browser before consent's been given or still after partial consent's been given is staggering. And it's amazing to see that even though with the threats of 4% fines based on your yearly revenue, I believe, it's still not entering the people's minds that people are becoming more aware, your consumers are becoming more thoughtful of the information that they want to share with a consumer. Me personally, if I go to a website that I've never been before, I'll usually say no. And I even last week I spoke to Stefan Hamel, a Canadian privacy advocate. He was at a conference in, I believe it was the UK, over 1,000 marketeers there. And he asked the question, how many of you use ad blockers? 70%. I mean, you know, they all want to bake the cake, but they don't want to take a bite out of it. So it's weird to see this change happening, that on the one end, we have people pushing for marketing campaigns using third-party platforms, using the Instagrams, the Metas, et cetera, but being very protective of their own data. It's some new technology incoming. I've been hearing this brand, I believe it's called Wunderkind, about further enriching profiles with email addresses. How long does this third-party world still have? How are marketers, how should they be thinking about privacy and the looming changes due to regulations? It's a tough question, sorry.
That's a really tough question. And I've worked with the guys at Wunderkind, and they're great guys. So yeah, but what I do see is that even Google say they're going to deprecate the third-party cookie, and then it gets an extension and an extension. Yeah. And then it just keeps
going. It's like Elon Musk saying that full self-drive will be launched next year. It will be out of beta next year.
Yeah. But I do think that there is a feeling within society that actually signing up to just give my data to not just the brand that I'm dealing with, but a whole bunch of third parties doesn't feel great. Yeah, that doesn't feel good. I think it's important for brands to think about the value that they're giving their customer. And if they can establish trust for just the data transfer and the value transfer between the brand and the individual, I think that's what should be concentrated on. And the fact that organizations need to kind of use other services, well, find a better way of doing it, you know? At Redpoint, we help organizations by basically building within their world, because we're kind of behind their firewall.
Yeah.
So we make the kind of some of the Redpoint stuff, which enables us to capture first party data, be a first party cookie. You know, that's the kind of the way that we work. And then that way it's clear that that data is to be used by that brand and that brand only, not taken out and put into some kind of mark, you know, into the meta worlds to just be monetized for someone else.
Yeah. Interesting. Yeah, I saw another video this morning, because the whole TikTok ban is looming in the US, and there's this they're a funny comedian in America called Jordan Klepper. And he did a piece on the whole shift of Gen Zs, if I say it now, or Gen Xs. Well, a lot of the, God, I feel old now. People are younger than myself, making a switch from TikTok in the US to a app called Red Notes.
Yeah.
Well, that blew my mind because they kind of broke down the what you have to agree to be able to use the app. And I believe one of part is that you have to announce your allegiance to the Chinese Communist Party. You will promote socialist behavior and values. And this is all in the terms and conditions. And I was amazed at the amount of people just accepting that blindly without fully understanding the impact of what they're doing. And at the one end, I think, so kind of coming back to Europe and GDPR and America, which has various state level privacy regulations, are we also going to be seeing kind of a cultural shift? And I know we're moving away from the CDP topic now, but are we, in your opinion, kind of also going to be seeing a cultural shift in how people think about data, or is it going to be kind of a line down the middle with people being protective, on the one hand, being protective of their data, and on the other hand, not really caring because they just want to be part of a social movement?
Well, I do think it's, you know, we are complex human beings, aren't we? And you know, we want everything, but we want to protect things. And it's, you know, it's really, really quite challenging. You know, I'm a Spotify user. I use Netflix, all of that kind of stuff. I'm pretty sure Amazon knows more about me than I know about myself at times. You know, if you imagine Amazon's got, it's got my, I hope I'm not giving too much away here. I've got a Kindle. So it now, it knows how fast I read. It knows how quickly I turn up. It knows what kind of things I read. It knows what I stop and maybe read a couple of times.
What you highlight, probably even.
Absolutely, yeah. And that's just from one channel. But it's also, I mean, I probably use Amazon for storing photos, storing some documents. I clearly probably buy some stuff on Amazon as well. You know, that all that kind of stuff is there. And do I sit there and kind of think, oh, well, I'm not sure about the amount of data that I'm giving away here? I'm just kind of like, oh, okay, that's life, you know?
Yeah.
But on the flip side of it is, on the flip side, I am probably concerned. If I sit back and think about it, I'm probably, you know, I've made sure on my phone on Siri that I need to push the button before Siri's allowed to listen to me. You know, actually, it's listening out for me to go, hey, Siri.
Not the voice activation part. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, that seems really scary to me. So we are complex human beings, and I think the most important, I think the thing that we should be thinking about as we're helping our customers think about that kind of data collection thing is what's the value exchange?
Yeah. Because that's what it comes down to. Absolutely. Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. And then I've just finished doing a three-part webinar on the three R's of great customer experience. Yeah.
Oh, let's hear them. I need to
keep it really, really simple in terms of, I just sort of say, okay, people want to feel recognized. Now, I know that if I go into my favorite restaurant with a bag over my head, they're not going to go, oh, it's Mike back. Have your favorite table. So I need to know that actually sometimes I need to take the bag off my head so that people...
Unless they're following you in their app and through geo-targeting, they know, hey, Mike just showed up.
Exactly. I mean, that's even more scary, isn't it?
Yeah. You
know? So you need to be recognized. And, you know, in our CDP world, one of the things that I'm always talking to prospects and customers about is, how are you recognizing your customer? Are you recognizing them as an individual, as a device, as a household, as an organization? All of those kind of things are really important in recognition. That's the first part of a great customer experience. Then we also talk about relevance. So, you know, I've gone into that restaurant, I've finally taken the bag off my head, and they go, oh, it's Mike back. That's great. Oh, you know, actually, you know, we know you like that kind of food, but we've got no food that you like. Actually, this isn't a date for you. Or do they turn around and go, got a special on, we know you're going to love this.
Yeah.
You know, that's relevance, isn't it? And then the last thing I talk about in those three R's is right time. So it's kind of like, okay, so as soon as I take that bag off, can they recognize me in that moment? Or is it only after I've left the restaurant that they kind of go, oh, I think that was Mike Ferguson. He's a regular here. Yeah. And actually, that's what makes a great customer experience. And what we need to be doing in terms of, you know, thinking about enabling our customers to do a better job, I think it's about those three things. Help them recognize people, come up with something relevant for them, help them deliver it at the right time.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And the right time, I was reading a book, the Customer 360 book by Andrea Lin and Martin Kinn from over at Salesforce. And they spoke about this as well. You know, the whole discussion about real time or near real time, or especially with the data warehouse approaches that we're seeing evolve today. There's always this continuous discussion is that, you know, can data warehouse do real time? But I think that that real time discussion is too generic, because you really need to look at the individual instances that you do need real time for. And I don't want to say they're few and far between. There are definitely cases where you need it. But what they really focused on in part of that book is the topic around right time. Exactly as you said it, are they able to communicate to you, recognize you, offer relevant content to you at the right time? So I really like the three R's there. And they do quite sum up the benefits of using CDPs in this day and age. And I think it's only going to get better as time goes on. What do you see as the, what are you kind of looking forward to? I mean, we started off the last 3 months. One of the memes I posted was with Matt Damon getting older from the movie Saving Private Ryan. Kind of feels like the CDP market is in a bit of turmoil, but focusing on the positive sides, what are you looking forward to in 2025?
Well, I'm convinced that as organizations that are our customers, that I mean, the economic climate's not, the outlook's not great. Okay, that's the reality of it. So organizations have invested in technology, and what I can see in this year is that they're going to be asked to deliver value from those investments, and that's going to be an exciting time. The story I told earlier about connecting a customer CDP to their paid media team and delivering
the $10 million uplift,
worth of benefit. I love those moments, because we go in and we sell it, and then customers, you know, they work at it and they're trying really hard. But then sometimes just getting involved and just helping them make that final connection, that's the thing that gives me a lot of personal pleasure.
Yeah, because what is the role that, you know, as the reports from CDP Institute shown, the number of implementations are going down. Is this going to be a year where we're going to iron out all the kinks with our customers from a vendor's perspective? Or should vendors be investing time in making sure that the end users, the customers, stop doubting their technology and helping them get to grips? And like you said, the example that you had, generating more value out of it?
I think that's right. And I think, you know, if I was sitting as a CD, as somebody who's invested in the CDP, and I'm not getting that from my CDP vendor, I should be asking some pretty strong questions. I think that's an important piece. You know, and actually, as I go around and I talk to people at trade shows, and I sort of say, so, you know, you've got a CDP, what's the value you're getting out of it? And they say, well, actually, I'm really struggling with that. So often I hand over my card and say, okay, let's get a conversation going. You know, I'm here. I've clearly experienced in the world. Maybe I can help you point out what you need to be doing to make those connections. And clearly, one of the things that I see from the Redpoint point of view is that there's a lot of people that have invested in CDPs that are, if I think about that process of going from data ingest, data hygiene, identity resolution, analysis, activation, and going forward from there, I think lots of people have invested and gone from this side of the process backwards, but they haven't invested properly in the, what I would say, the customer data readiness part. And so, you know, they've got CDPs that probably that they've made an assumption that there's some magic happening before the data gets to the CDP.
It's magic everywhere. That's what they're expecting. Indeed.
Yeah. And that's where I can see, you know, as Redpoint, we can help organizations that are in that place, because being a composable CDP, we can pick and choose what we use to help. And it might be that you've got some marketing CDP that's out there that's all set up, it's linked into your campaign teams, all of that kind of stuff, but the data coming in isn't working for you. I'm quite excited with the opportunity that actually we can go in and help people sort out that customer data management piece.
Yeah, it'd be interesting to see what kind of methods will evolve in helping customers find or actually identify the value. Because in my opinion, CDPs have always indirectly influenced profit and loss. It's very difficult to actually say, hey, this was caused by this change or this module or this update that we did within the CDP. It is quite difficult.
Well, one tip for your listeners, thinking back to that thing that I was talking about with the paid media, joining your CDP data to your paid media. This was an existing paid media campaign. So they had an audience that they were getting, and they were pushing it through into, I think it was Google rather than Meta. I can't remember which one. And they were getting a match rate. And then they, what we said is, look, just take the data out of the CDP for the same audience, but it's a wider record. It's a fuller record. When we pushed that over into the paid media platform, what match rate do you get? And they saw a significant uplift. So in there, you've got a great A/B test. You've got a campaign that's been running for years. And then all of a sudden, we put in the super-powered fuel into it, and they kind of go, oh, this is great. You know, all of a sudden, we're getting a higher match rate. We're getting a wider reach with our targeting, and actually, we're seeing much better results come back.
Yeah.
That's a really simple thing to do in terms of
It often is. Right. It often is. I'd like to end on that high point there. And Mike, it's been really interesting talking to you again, because we did connect a little bit before. We did this recording, and the second time hasn't disappointed either. It's always great picking your brain, listening from a kind of a vendor's perspective, not necessarily a vendor, I have to admit. It's more from a professional in the field. Mm. And it's good to, it'll be good to see how you develop in 2025, also how Redpoint Global is going to develop as a CDP in 2025. And hopefully we can connect in a few more months and see what's changed since then.
Absolutely. We need the second round of coffee, okay? So we'll have that and carry on the conversation. Matthew, it's been a pleasure today. Always a great conversation with you.
Same here, Mike. I'll talk to you next time then.